Michelle began with this mission statement that I put together at one point. The mission of librarians is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation within their communities. And I wanted to spend some time on where that came from. And actually, it began way back when I was asked to create a white paper that became the Library as Conversation, because the American Library Association wanted a sense of what was going on in social networking. What is this Web 2.0 thing, and what's its potential impact on libraries? So we began doing the really horrible white paper, right? It's the one where you start with a bad definition of everything. This is social media, this is social networking, this is Flickr, this is, and it was very unsatisfying. And as we began going down deeper, going, what's really going on here? What's happening? Is this a new form of collection where people are collecting friends? We thought that was delightful. We could walk around with a Mark record or something like that. And what we really came to is what people are doing is they're learning. And that when we look at how people learn, they learn by conversation. This comes out of something called conversation theory. I'll talk about it in a moment. And conversations are something that involves two parties. That we are both shaped by a conversation and we shape the conversation. And that when you look at the new social tools, people were using this to shape their learning environments. They were saying, these are the people I want to hear from. This is where I want to know what's going on in the world. This is what I want to hear is what's important. Here are the people I want to hear those quips and quotes and what their cat did and what they ate last night. And so this really began a whole exploration going, all right, if what's lying at the, underneath this is learning, someone asked the question about participation for what? And my answer for that is participation for learning. That what we do is, whether we're learning about ourselves, whether we're learning what we like, whether we're learning about what we're going to do for the day, it's all about learning. And that's all an interactive conversation. And so this led us into looking at libraries and how do librarians and libraries get reshaped if we base them on this fundamental concept of learning and conversation. And so the mission here is about facilitation and what they're facilitating. But it has some implications, which is if this is the mission, you'll notice, not of a library, but of the librarian, what is the role of the institution? What is the role of that place, that thing, that website? And this is where you sort of end up, which is that a library is actually the infrastructure and tools that a librarian uses to fulfill his or her mission. And I know this is very different because I've seen many discussions about how the library is this sort of eternal body in which we just rotate librarians out of. And this sort of turns it around and says it's a place where the real work gets done. But what's happening is that librarians are increasingly leaving that place. There was a comment yesterday about this physical place of libraries is very important. And I wanted to get up and say, for what? For many cases, as a quiet place to learn, as a place to produce, we saw Doc and what's going on in Delft as a place to experiment. But there are many times where we don't need that infrastructure. And so as librarians are leaving the facilities and needing less and less of the facility, we used to take the library out, we put a diesel engine and called them bookmobiles, and now we walk around with these. And the question then becomes, does that mean you get rid of the physical place? And the answer, at least in the States, is increasingly no, we turn it back to the community. That it becomes a community place where they determine what happens in it. Because we as librarians don't need that facility to do our jobs as we used to. It then leads this to a rather other interesting conclusion, which therefore the future of the library and the future of librarians are not the same. That in fact, these two missions can come in direct conflict with, which is, if I am to facilitate knowledge, that doesn't mean that I always continue the institution. That doesn't mean that I always do what's in the best interest of the institution. We were having a discussion last night about the idea that sometimes the reason we don't change is because we don't want to. Well, sometimes to be a good librarian means that you must leave that institution. One of the questions that I think that we need to come back to in just talking about this is that is the ultimate conclusion of the culture that we created, this participatory culture, the dissolution of our institutions, and is that actually a victory? So, I wanted to go back to the mission for a moment and pick a few of the key terms that I'd like to talk about. The first is around knowledge creation, and what do I mean by that? And I'll just warn you, as I told in my small groups, I sort of think I have three stories I use all the time, and then they're like, I'm now getting a series of fights that I, and so this one was a fight with a philosopher around constructivism, and I'm just not going to go there. So we're just going to assume that knowledge is constructive. So knowledge is creation. And so we facilitate this knowledge creation, and how do we do it? Through conversation. This comes out of past conversation theory and pedagogy, where we talk about critical thinking that was mentioned. We talk about reflective thinking. So that many of the conversations that we're having are with ourselves. Hopefully not out loud in public places, but from time to time. And so when people talk about reading, they say, well, I'm reading. Are you having a conversation with a book? No. It's dead trees or pixels on glass. Are you having a conversation with the author? No, they're probably dead, or haven't noticed that you've been talking to them. You're having a conversation with yourself. Do I believe this? Don't I believe this? Do I agree? Don't I agree? If at some point during my presentation you asked yourself, what is he talking about? Who were you talking to? If you woke up this morning and said, should I go for a walk around the lake, or should, frankly, I have another croissant? Who were you talking to? We do this all the time. Our institutions are about facilitating conversations not only within the individual, looking and reflecting on art, but within groups and societies and cultures, and literally a discussion about what it means to be human over the centuries. That is an ongoing conversation. And conversations consist of the conversants, the parties involved. So we're all struggling with the word, and I don't like it, but the truest sense of what we're talking about are not members or guests or visitors or tourists, but conversants. Learners would be another way to put it. The language that we exchange, we talk about in culture, language being very important, but we also have to understand that our own institutions are conversations. And we have a very stilted language within ourselves. As I like to remind librarians, no one was born speaking Boolean. No one walked in and said, I know. It's like Venn diagrams. That's how it's natural, isn't it? I have a boy, and he is cute. We don't do that. Right? What we are exchanging language to do is to come up with an agreement. In essence, what we're doing here is we are seeking agreements. And one of the most important agreements that people can reach is agreeing not to agree. If we don't agree on something, does that stop the conversation, or do we move somewhere else? But that is the idea of a conversation, and ultimately, that needs to be put into a memory so that we can remember from time to time what we've already agreed to. If many of you have existed in committee meetings, you wish we were better at this. Why are we having this conversation again? And that memory is very important, because memory is not hierarchical, and memory is not a set of buckets, and memory doesn't fit nicely into a taxonomy. Memory is relational. As people look at this building, people are going to look and say, oh, it's history. Oh, it's where The Sound of Music was filmed in the back. Oh, it's where I went with my wife. All these things are how they're related to me. There is no inherent meaning to this building, merely a set of relationships that I build and remember. And so what are the skills? What is the role of a librarian? And I would say museum specialist, but I don't want to be arrogant enough to talk for a field I haven't studied. The way in which the role of the librarian, what I mean by facilitating conversations, means to, first of all, provide access to conversations. Now, access to artifacts, access to materials, and that's all this is useful, is important. But is secondary. This is a result of a conversation. And increasingly with technology, we're able to get to the participants directly. So access is important, and about 90% of a library is built around this concept of access, but access is insufficient. If I take a 2-year-old and I leave him in a library for 3 days and come back, he probably won't be able to read just because he had access to the material. It takes something more. So the other skill, the other thing an information professional must do is to provide knowledge, basic knowledge within. if the conversation is happening in Chinese, if the conversation is happening in Spanish, I'm going to need help. I'm going to need to speak that language. Or as we're dealing with in the public library sector, if the conversation's online, I better know how to use one of these. I better know how to get where I'm going. They also facilitate by providing a safe environment for these conversations. A safe environment can be physical safety, but it's often intellectual safety. I've heard many a stirring idea about museums that I had not been aware of, the memory museums, the idea of reconciliation, the idea that these are hard, hard topics to deal with. And this is a safe place in which to encounter it. When I walk into the Holocaust Museum in D.C., or if I walk into the Holocaust exhibit at the Imperial War Museum in London, I feel that I can encounter these emotions and not be judged. That's a sense of safety. I say, with intellectual safety, I can read Mein Kampf and not be accused of being a Nazi, because I want to see what that was. There's a sense of intellectual safety, physical safety. But lastly, and something I think we often ignore, they ultimately must have skill in the motivation for that conversation. So in the U.S., we talk about the digital divide. And these sort of fit along that. It used to be that we say, oh, if you don't have a computer or if you don't have a smartphone, you can't be a full participant in society. Well, that's all right. We gave them computers, and it turns out that when we did, they didn't use them. So we moved to the second divide, which is, oh, and this is how to use them. And then we found out that people didn't necessarily use them because they were afraid they're going to be taken. So we needed to provide a safe way to get that computer home. But then the last thing was, I just don't want to. I mean, let's face it, we're working in organizations where we have plenty of people who know the technology, can get to the technology. We've told them it's okay to fail, and they just don't want to. That's another divide. We have to figure out how to motivate people. And libraries and museums primarily have been dealing with one kind of motivation, which is intrinsic motivation. People want to do this. Tourists walk in because they want to see the British Museum. People come to the library because they want to read. But there's another kind of motivation that we need to be smarter about, which is extrinsic motivation, which is you will go. And in fact, we had a great conversation about the school visit. And the school visit is a sense of extrinsic motivation, right? Where are we going? To the museum. Why do you want to go? Because we go to McDonald's afterwards, right? We force them in and now you will learn. But we have to understand that in some ways, with our advocacies, with our policies, with our laws, when we say things like, you can't be a library director without a Master's of Library Science degree, that's a form of extrinsic motivation that we have used to our benefit. The last comment, and then I will get off the stage, and I thank you for your time, is this improved society. I didn't expect it, but it turns out that one of the other arguments that I've been getting in is that when people look at the mission, they're not happy with the improved society clause. We're librarians. Our job isn't to improve society. That's one. But my one I love is, who the hell are we to say what improving society is? How arrogant. In the past month, I have been called a communist, a fascist, and an arrogant person. And it has been a fascinating month. But it comes to this idea that who are we to improve? Who told us, librarians and museum people, improving society? Who told you you could do that? And the answer is the communities that give us the money, the power, the recognition, the status to do it. But improving society is not a simple matter of this fascist, that's where that word came from. The communist was that I said improved society might have to do with underrepresented people, but that's another issue. The improved society doesn't mean that on one hand we have a view and we will enforce it upon our communities, and it doesn't mean on the other hand that we will just take what the community wants even if we feel it's self-destructive and say okay with that. As I said in my comments on the first night, I hate big, thick borders. It is more complex. And I come back to the notion that we are both shaped and shape conversations. I want to talk quickly about how we're shaped. And I'll do it with this quote from Andrew Carnegie. There's no such cradle of democracy upon the earth as the free public library. This republic of letters where neither rank, office, nor wealth receive the slightest consideration. Librarians in the room, how many of you at one point in your life have put this on a slide? Really? Because we put it on buildings all the time. Right? We love to talk about this. And so what I think we need to understand is that we live in an age, this participatory culture, that we, in no small part, helped to create. This is the world that we have asked for. This is the world we have worked for. Why showcase culture if we are not enabling contributions to culture? Why information if not for informed participation? Why education if not for advocacy? Why is it when we espouse the value and virtue of empowerment, we are surprised when they seek power in shaping our destinies as well? We have, for centuries, told the world that we are a public good and we lead to empowered citizenry, that we lead to a society of people who can make decisions and make a better world. And why are we then shocked when they turn back to us and say, and how can you be better? And this is what you should do. This is what we wanted. This is the world that librarians have longed for. And why do we then pretend in some astonished way that we could learn from it as well? So, one, the community gets to define what improved society is, but not alone, because we must also shape a conversation. The time for introspection is done. The time for trivia is done. The time for looking for the future of libraries and museums in catalogs and strategic plans is done. The needs for our communities is too great and our promise for improvement too large. Already at this summit, we've heard about the need for education, jobs, food, disaster assistance. Many of us, including myself, are returning to riots and civil unrest in our own countries. Our appetites for energy are unsustainable, and the very memory of our society is eroding behind walls of commerce, false scarcity, and obsolescence. For too long, as libraries and museums, we have defined the core of our profession, service, as standing ready to serve. No one has ever improved the world by standing ready. If we have another conversation and another declaration of participation good and don't turn it into real action, don't look around the world and see the revolution that we help foment, if we don't say this non-biased, non-involved, detached expertise is done, we are irrelevant. We have an opportunity to participate in our own societies. The skills that we bring to them, my group's got a great curriculum, we'll solve that tomorrow. But what we have to be dedicated to is we cannot treat the participatory culture as something out there. We must be part of that culture, and that might mean that we are no longer an institution, but individuals doing it. It might mean that the technology shifts and changes, but our mission remains the same. Ladies and gentlemen, in this room, in Salzburg, are change agents, people who have an amazing story that we must tell and tell and tell. But it will be completely unacceptable if what turns out of this is a report that sits on a shelf that says participation good. What must come out of this is real, permanent change. Thank you very much.